back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive, just like it says here on the wrapper. We are into full sort of summer mode, and we have all sorts of things happening here, Don Moeller. First off, the ice cream will be melting here if I don't get that involved here and tell you that Taharka are great sponsors. We rover at State Fair where the tent's up and the chicken and waffles were out. I meandered over there for lunch, Don. I actually had lunch at State Fair. Very unusual for me. Delicious lunch. I had a big salad, man. How you doing over in Catonsville?
We're Catonsville is doing well. As you said, our sponsors are out there working hard. I had a terrific tour of the what will be the new Fadley's. Fadley's staying in the city in their historic location in the new Lexington Market, but also opening up its first suburban location in Catonsville. They'll be coming to Catonsville in the next 18 months, and Damie Hahn took Councilman Tom Quirk and I on a tour. It's going to be absolutely spectacular, and somehow in the midst of a pandemic, Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realtors continuing to sell all kinds of real estate. So give Jeff a call if you want to sell or you're ready to buy. And our friends at Center Maryland continue to do great things and put all the news together. And speaking of putting all the news together, today's guest, Nestor, I know is right up your alley. And you today, as opposed to me, we both have some history. You may even go back further with our guests than I do.
Well, I would say I met Joan Jacobson. I began at the Sun. And, Joan, I'm a little bit like I remember every date, right? January the 6th, 1986 was my start date at the Baltimore Sun. And the math on that is I was born October 68. So I had to join the Baltimore Washington Newspaper Guild as a 17-year-old. And I had to get my parents to sign a permission slip. And that is true. That is true.
That's great.
And, you know, I literally about 4 weeks ago, I went through all of my music stuff in the month of May. And I'm going to the beach with my wife for a week. And I'm featuring all of my old interviews and from all of my career as the music critic back in the day. And I walked a picket line in a strike in June of 87, 88, somewhere in there.
87.
There you go. So I was... I was 18. No, I wasn't even, I was 18 that summer. So there you have it. So I learned about things early in life. And Joan, I just want to tell you this. All I ever wanted to be was Oscar Madison or really John Steadman, you know.
Right.
And when I retired from the Sun at the grand old age of 23, and my dad was dying at that time, and my dad was really mad at me because he thought I would retire at the Baltimore Sun. Now, I'm 52 now. It's 2020. My dad died in 1992. Okay, but he thought I would retire with a gold watch and a plaque on the wall because he wanted me to be John Steadman too. You know, he was disappointed that I wasn't going to be there. I think in 2020, I think we would all be disappointed with what we thought, and we went to journalism school, and I was trained by such amazing people, you know, Jack Gibbons and Jack Lemmon and these people that I think about when people like Don Moeller, quite frankly, that are the good angel on my shoulder showing me the right way of truth and facts, and seeing David Simon and Rafael Alvarez arguing in the middle of the night when you're 18 years old, coming back from a crime scene.
Right.
Joan, you know, where we are with the newspaper, this is a really important segment, and I just want to set it up that way to say all my life, all I ever wanted to do was work for a newspaper. I wrote a bio a week or two ago thinking about running for mayor where I said on my tombstone it will say writer because that's what I believe I am. We need to really think in this country about journalism and newspapers, and welcome to the show. I'm going to give you all the oxygen you can, but I want to let you know I'm on your team with Save Our Sun.
Great. That's really nice, Nestor.
Well, give us where we are. And okay. We have, newspapers have taken down mayors in this city recently, right?
Right.
And a newspaper, as Don showed me a couple weeks ago, newspapers still have power. They endorse Brandon Scott. Brandon Scott's going to be the next mayor. So power to the Sun on that. But who owns it? How it's powered, okay. How it gets bullied by a president, all of these things are out in the open right now.
Okay, so let me tell you.
Joan, you don't think Nestor's a little excited about this topic, do you, Joan?
No, I don't. All right, well, let me tell you where we are. First of all, let me quickly introduce myself. I was an Evening Sun and Sun reporter for 28 years. I was also an officer of the Newspaper Guild. I left in 2002, so I've been gone a long time. Since then, I authored 8 research studies for the Abel Foundation, and I co-authored 2 memoirs. So just leave it at that. But right now, I am a volunteer helping the Save Our Sun campaign. So as most of your listeners know, the Sun is much smaller than it used to be. The staff has seriously been reduced over the years, so that the number of people doing journalism at the Sun is many, many fewer, from 400 to less than 100. That said, they won a Pulitzer Prize, as everybody knows, for news reporting, for local news, for the Kathy Pugh stories, which were tremendous, and even more tremendous when you think of how few reporters they had to do the work. They did really, really great work. So,
Joan, I would say, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second. I would encourage our listeners to jump on BaltimorePositive.com and check out a recent episode with Luke Broadwater,
yes.
who was the premier reporter, young reporter, who broke that story. And we had Luke on for a good 30 to 40
minutes.
That's
right, yeah.
Luke was the first reporter to break it.
And then the rest of the staff, jumped in, especially Doug Donovan, and really dug in. But things are dire at the moment. The Sun is owned by the Tribune Corporation, which Tribune Publishing actually, which owns several newspapers, and they have not done well for the Sun. But things are about to get even worse because there's a predatory company called Alden Global Capital that buys newspapers and runs them into the ground, takes money out of them, and leaves them with almost nothing left. One of their small newspapers in California has one reporter left.
Mm.
So Alden now owns 30% of Tribune, but after June 30th, they will be allowed to buy majority shares and do with the Sun whatever they want. So, that in mind, the Goldsucker Foundation and the Abel Foundation have come together and are willing to buy the Sun from Tribune and turn it over to a nonprofit, which would be pretty amazing because you think of the millions of dollars that the heads of Tribune, the hedge fund owners, take out for bonuses for themselves every year. That money would go back into the newspaper. So what's happening now is that we have a public campaign to convince Tribune to sell the Sun. We know that Goldsucker and Abel have contacted Tribune. I do not know if there are negotiations going on. If there are, it's, I'm sure, in secret. But in the meantime, this is what we're doing. We have collected more than 6,000 names on a petition, and the petition has been delivered to Tribune Board. We had a letter-writing campaign, mostly from Sun alums, collected up to 50 to 100 letters that were already sent to the head of the board of Tribune. We now have a social media campaign going on, where Sun alums and others, including Don, have made 30-second videos telling Tribune why they should save the Sun and sell it. And there's also going to be a social media campaign with quotes from letters and other things people have written. So that is what's going on right now.
Well, you can take any of the 30 seconds of the first 5 minutes of the program for me, so have at it.
What?
You know, I was looking around for my old, like, Sun ID card and all of that, and, you know, for everyone that left, I left as a 23-year-old who was trying to get a job anywhere in the news because all I ever wanted to do from the time I was 8 years old. Joan, the reason I know Don Mohler is when I first signed up for journalism in the ninth grade, a guy named Marty Bating was a substitute teacher who worked at the News American in the press room and got me my internship at the dying News American. And Bob Nussgart and Molly Dunham Glassman saved me and brought me over with Mike Marlowe and Larry Harris, and
yeah.
You know, I was 17 years old, and you know, I think back to those days of what newspapers represented, and the The evening sun and the morning sun, we did not get along. We fought. Don, there was a fight in the newsroom about who took the Mayflower picture in 1984 that lasted years, that created angst between the photography. It was incredible, but I think back to that era and how bad I wanted to be a newspaper reporter and where that 12-year-old, 15-year-old kid is and what's happened to the industry. When I left in 93, I didn't think there would not be a newspaper. I didn't think there would be an internet. But I think when the internet came along, and you left kind of sort of when the internet began, but there are all of these people like us, these alumni, who want the Luke Broadwaters, the Manny Machados of the Baltimore Sun, to not be at the New York Times. I mean, Don, right. you mentioned was at the Baltimore Sun. Well, he was because he hit 70 home runs last year, and he's going to play for the other team now. Because right. And to really read up, and Joan, I'm on this Vanity Fair piece here, right, about hedge fund vampire, right? Like, right. And I start to, because I still read and I love journalism, you know, and I really worry about this because I saw the Examiner try to come in here, and I remember the beginning and the end of that, and I had a bad experience there, and I was going to be one of their columnists till they found out that I was going to write what I wanted to write, and they fired me the first night they went into business. I can write a book about this stuff and how much I wanted to be involved in telling the truth, right? And we're really at a very Orwellian point here where people don't trust newspapers, they don't trust politics, they don't trust anything, where people like Don and I certainly was brought up in this way. My father loved newspapers. It was how I was taught to read when I was 3 and 4 years old, was reading the sports section of the Baltimore Sun every morning with Bob Mazel, you know? People don't trust stuff, and I'm really worried. I don't know what the future is with the Goldsecker, the idea, and Matt Gallagher and I have gone back and forth about who supports it, local businesses, the classified ads going away in Craigslist, and the business model. But I don't know where the business model is, but this is very interesting that it becomes a bit of a community trust, right? That in the way we would envision it in 2030, not what it was in 86 as I remember it.
Well, no, I wouldn't quite. It could be sort of like a community trust, but a nonprofit. And so you totally reconfigure where the money goes, how it's made, and how it's put back into the business. That's what they need. And let me just add one thing to what you said about people don't believe the news. Well, I think actually there are a lot of people who do believe the news. And in Baltimore, what I've seen is that as the paper's gotten smaller, people have abandoned the Sun. And so I know educated people who read the New York Times cover to cover every day or read the Washington Post, and they say, well, I don't read the Sun anymore. And they have huge gaps in their knowledge of Baltimore and Maryland. And you mentioned something that you think everybody knows, and they know nothing about it because they haven't read The Sun. So I think that there's a bigger problem here, in addition to, you know, the Trump world where people don't believe real news and don't believe the real truth, is that people need to come back to The Sun now and subscribe and read it.
Well, Joan, you know, as you know, in the little video that I did, I alluded to being a little boy who loved, you know, the sports pages because they were writing about my heroes, and I couldn't wait. And at that time, in my family, we got both the morning and the evening sun. And
oh, my God, I was on the steps waiting for the evening paper every day.
Right, and waiting for it to come. And to your point, Joan, about the importance of it, and I want to talk about some examples because I know you have some examples of where this model has worked. But as someone who has grandchildren, I guess I've become a bit of a missionary about how people become educated and how their vocabularies, for example, become more expansive. And I'm not sure that you can do that with a generation of young people without them being exposed to the written word and continuing to expand their vocabulary by interacting with text. I don't believe there's any other way to do it.
Yeah.
And I think it's that important. And we have some models out there. I know people have alluded to the Salt Lake Tribune and the Tampa Bay Times, and I think even the Philadelphia Inquirer,
Philly
right, are models?
Yes. Philly Inquirer is run by a nonprofit now. That's right. So and it's been done. Successful. It can happen.
Well, so, in finding this, where does our audience, where is the activation for Baltimoreans who love the Sun, subscribe to the Sun, or need to be awakened to say we can't be a zero newspaper town and these other places that these Aldens have gone? I mean, I think about New Orleans. And Joan, you know, professionally over the last 30 years, you know, I've morphed from taking phone calls to talking to experts as from a sports perspective. And part of my whole world was when the New Orleans Saints and the Ravens get together, calling down to New Orleans and looking for the beat writers, right? And I have literally in the last 15 years watched this evaporate, right? Watch these reporters and friends of mine who used to work for the Buffalo News not be there anymore, or the Cleveland Plain Dealer, my God, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, when you think about the Baltimore-Cleveland thing, and Don, I know you know this, you know, that triangle because of the Ravens and the Browns and all of that stuff for years and years, that's where all of the information that all of us used as resources as to how did the team get here and who's paying for it and how did the stadium get. Yeah. And it really, when I do go out and talk to people, I literally am amazed in the Trump thing. And Don will tell you, I wrote a book on the Ravens 7 years ago and no one wanted to read it. And I realized, man, people don't read anything. They don't even read what they love. And that it really does worry me.
Right. Well, and as you said, the Cleveland Plain Dealer is a good example. It's just been decimated. So I think Don's right. You need to bring people back. But if you look at newspaper websites, it's not just the written word now. There's so many videos. There's so much live streaming. So people do, there's a way to suck people in to read the written word. And I think that a new and improved Baltimore Sun owned by a nonprofit could bring people back. I mean, when was the last time you saw promotional advertising going out on the airwaves and saying, read the Baltimore Sun. This is what you can find in the Baltimore Sun. They used to do that. They used to have campaigns to get people to read the paper, and that doesn't happen. They could do that all over again. They could find all kinds of ways to bring people back. You know, you look at what's not being covered, and it's a wide range, and it goes from investigating government agencies misusing money all the way to non-existent coverage of a lot of community news, food, restaurants. I mean, they have maybe one or two people doing that, and I don't really know how these reporters do it. They have so much to cover, and there's so many beats that are not covered at all because they don't have enough people.
It's ridiculous, Joan. The way they've cut back. I mean, you and I remember well. I mean, I remember. I mean, we know that the Sun had world bureaus, but on a local level, I mean, for years, both when I was with the school system and then in county government in the beginning, Sun had a Baltimore County bureau.
Yeah.
Right there in Towson.
Yeah.
I mean, and those are the investments they don't make anymore.
Right, there's no Towson Bureau there. I think there might be two reporters covering all of Baltimore County.
Right.
When I was there, I was in Baltimore County twice, once in the 70s and once in the 90s. In the 90s, there was a bureau of maybe a dozen reporters.
Right.
Bureau I wanted to work at was the Ocean City beat in the summer, you know, back in the day.
We did have an Ocean City beat.
I remember that beat, man. I applied for that beat, and they said, no way. That was back in 88 or 89. Joan Jacobson is here. We were at one point on the fifth floor together down at 501 North Calvert Street.
Right.
And I want to encourage everyone out there in our Baltimore Positive community on behalf of Don Moeller, who loves newspapers. Don, you and I had that in common, right? Right, reading the paper. We were little boys,
well,
right?
When I listened to Joan talk, and before we let Joan get out of here today, I want to really talk about some of her takeaways from her great work even after she left the Sun. But a couple of quick questions, Joan. If people want to, because it sounds to me, and we're going to get this interview up right away because we know the clock is ticking. Sounds like the clock is ticking.
Yes.
If people want to weigh in and help your effort and save the Sun, what can they do right now when they hear this interview?
Well, they can certainly go on the Save Our Sun website. Just look up Save Our Sun, Save Our Baltimore Sun, I believe, and sign the petition. It's SaveOurBaltimoreSun.com. They can sign up to get information. They can sign up to support and sign the petition, but also they can buy the Sun. They can subscribe to show there are more people interested, to show there's a bigger readership. And as I said, there's a lot of people who are not reading the Sun. And if you get a digital-only Sun, it's not expensive.
I'm showing the website right now. I'm actually up on the site, SaveOurBaltimoreSun.com. There's several little click-throughs here, what you can do in joining, why a locally owned nonprofit Sun, and Save Our Sun, and read how. There's also the hashtag SaveOurSunHun, H-O-N. Make sure you spell it appropriately, just like Hunman did down on 295. Saw a new sign up down there a couple weeks ago. But for Baltimore and for the importance, Don, I want you to weigh in as former Baltimore County executive. And Joan, everyone, you know, refers to him in that way and all that, and he's trying to get me working on titles, and I just started calling Brandon Scott council president, and now I got to call him mayor, so I'm working on all this. But
Mr.
Mr. County Executive, Mr. CE, I call him DI because that's what his family name from all these years. Don, I want you to weigh in on why this is important from having been a principal, a guidance counselor to me, a guy who guided me into trying to be a journalist, quite frankly, got me into my first journalism class in ninth grade. But if this goes away, what does this mean when we're talking about trying to eliminate corruption in politics, which really you would express that would be at the heart of why I started Baltimore Positive, right?
It would be tragic. It would be absolutely tragic. A couple of quick stories to that point. First, I've told several times on Baltimore Positive since we've been up and running almost 250 episodes. But, Joan, you'll remember the Baltimore Examiner. And the morning that the short-lived Examiner closed its doors and went out of business, another reporter called me. I was, at that point, communications director for Baltimore County Executive Jim Smith. And they called and said, and the Examiner was a conservative paper, had been pretty tough on Jim Smith and other Democratic leaders across the state. And the reporter said, well, I guess I know the answer to this, but I guess County Exec is pretty happy this morning, right, that the Examiner went out of business. And I said, well, if you think you know the answer, my gut is you don't have a clue what the answer is.
Yeah, that's not how you begin an interview, by telling somebody you think you know what they're going to say.
Right. And I said, but I'm pretty sure the answer that you think you have in your mind is not the answer. So give me a second. I'm going to walk down the hallway. So I walk down the hallway, and I pop into Jim Smith's office. I said, hey, boss, I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to say, but how do you feel about the Examiner going out of business? And he goes, Don, it's awful. It's awful. He said, you know, a free press that asks tough questions, that holds your feet to the fire, is what makes sure democracy continues to work in the United States. I said, okay, pretty sure that's what you were going to say.
Right.
I went back and said to the reporter, if anybody that thinks that the county executive popping champagne because a newspaper went out of business, they don't know Jim Smith. He really was saddened, even though they had beat him up pretty bad from time to time. I guess there are three stories. That's one. Second one is, I noticed that Pam Wood, who's covering the state now, has been furloughed. You know, I've noticed a couple of times she's saying, I can't report today because I'm on furlough. And I'm thinking, how sad is that? Because here's another really outstanding young reporter who works tirelessly. I mean,
Let me jump in here about Pam. Everybody thinks Pam Wood is the only person who's furloughed. So let me just make a sort of an addition to what you're saying, and I'm sorry to interrupt. But
no, please do.
So the current, you know, owner of the Sun is not great. And so what they did is they threatened layoff because of the economic climate. And the Newspaper Guild members voted. Instead of losing some of them permanently, they have agreed to these unpaid furloughs. I believe it's 1 week for each month of the next 3 months. Some of them have also gotten a small permanent pay cut. This is while the people who run Tribune are getting millions, okay?
Yeah.
And so Pam, I think that Pam Wood might have put it out on social media, and so people are flipping out because she is a fantastic reporter. and she's one of the best ones, but she's just one of all of them. All of them.
She's part of it, right. She's
right, and no matter how much seniority, you still get a furlough week. So she's not losing her job, and she's not the only one furloughed. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt.
I'm glad you did interrupt and point out that she's part of a larger team. My point about Pam, and again, it goes back to the importance of a free press, was that Pam covered, when she was the Baltimore County reporter, she covered my former boss, you know, God rest his soul, Kevin Kamenetz, extensively. And she was as tough as could be on Kevin. And you know, Pam, whether it was asking me or pushing me over and over and over, or Kevin over and over and over.
But that's part of your job, right? Kevin, your gig is to get asked tough questions, Nestor, right?
It was their job. And what Kevin understood particularly about Pam, and I know other reporters occasionally would sort of get their nose out of joint, because Pam would always be getting exclusive comments and observations from county executive candidates, and it's because he knew she worked hard, he knew she wanted to get it right, and he knew she was really smart.
Right.
And Kevin loved to interact with people who were smart and cared about what they were doing, who were going to push him hard. So again, without a daily Sun paper, I don't know how we get that kind of coverage. Joan, as you said, without a Sun paper, and Nestor, without a Sun paper, Catherine Pugh is still mayor.
Well, that's possible, although I think the FBI was probably onto her for a while. That's my guess.
Yeah,
you're right.
Maybe.
And just to give a shout-out to the other, you know, news media in town, the Sun has always covered a broad spectrum of news. There are smaller groups. There's certainly Baltimore Brew, which is my favorite, run by my friend Fern Shen and Mark Reuter. And, you know, two reporters who are really seasoned can do a lot, but they can't do everything. And, you know, then there's always Jane Miller, WBAL, who, you know, who's amazing. But
my good buddy, I always say, Joan, and Nestor's heard me say it a million times, and Jane knows, because we laugh about it, and I consider Jane a good friend, but I used to kid her. My staff knew that the most dreaded words in my position as chief of staff or communications director was when my assistant would walk in and say, "Hey, Don, Jane's on the phone."
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, Joan, there's been a threat that we're going to interview Jane Miller on this show. Turn a table on her.
Oh, that would be great. She's terrific, yeah.
Joan Jacobson is here. Save our Sun and save our BaltimoreSun.com, the way to get there. Joan, I want to turn this back just one more moment on the – you mentioned unions. I sort of mentioned early on that I walked a picket line and my parents signed a permission slip to get me into the Baltimore Washington Newspaper Guild. Well, I know I wouldn't recognize anything that would look or feel like a newsroom with Jim Day from back in the day, or Marty Kaiser, or any of the other people that affected me when I was a young person and tried to teach me to ask tough questions and want to know the truth and write the truth. But the size of the union that we circled the building down there at 501 North Calvert Street during June of 87 versus now, and I do remember, Dom, when you were in the union, you got this little book. It was the size of like an umpire's rule book, you know. It was a little printed book, and it told you, you know, what your first year, what you'd make, second year, how many vacation days, all of your insurance information.
Right.
And I remember getting that little book. Where is the union part of newspapering at this point, Joan?
Okay. Well, good news is that the Sun unit of what's now called the News Guild, it used to be called the Newspaper Guild, is still very much alive and active. And as a matter of fact, this Save Our Sun campaign, it's being financed by the International Guild.
Wow.
They paid, I believe, $30,000 to hire the PR firm KO that has been helping with all this promotion and the website. And the new president of the International Guild is right behind everybody. He's really terrific. His name is John Schloist. I think that's how you pronounce his name. So there is, and the Newspaper Guild also has been organizing. Like, the Los Angeles Times was never union. It is now represented by the Guild, which produced John Schloist, the new international president. So, and there's still steward trainings going on at the Sun, and young reporters and others who totally understand the importance of having a strong union. So it's great. It's still there and surprisingly getting stronger at the moment.
Can I tell a newspaper story just from a guild when I was a young
sure.
person that happened with union and not union? So I'm at the Sun and I'm at the bottom of the, you know, I'm an agate clerk, I'm an editorial assistant, I'm picking up $25 here writing a review of a concert or $25 there doing a softball game.
Right.
And I really wanted to get a big time job, Joan, you know that, you know, and there was only so much room for reporters and I was young and I didn't go to the right school and I was still in college, but I was, you know, I was an aggressive young man. And Don, the Miami Herald was going to hire me. Steve Miller left the Sun and got me an interview with Ed Pope, the Pontiff down in Miami, and a guy named Anger, and Mark Anger, I believe his name was big executive. Don, they flew me to Miami, okay? And at the time, I'm making, I don't know, $32,000, but which is a lot of money for a 21, 22-year-old guy. I was 21 years old. And they flew me down to Miami. The Miami Herald was not a union paper, okay? So I fly down there. They put me up at the Marriott on the 20th floor and I ordered shrimp cocktail and I went over and they took my blood. They took me to a hospital and drew my blood. I took the Knight Ridder psychological examination. It was like a Rorschach test. You familiar with this, Joan? Is this
no,
making sense?
No, wow, that's
there
amazing.
There was a Knight Ridder.
We're in rapt attention here.
No.
The Baltimore Sun never took my blood.
It was a personality. They took my blood, I'm
wow.
telling you. They took a personality test. I went back and I flew home and I waited. Now, I was a member of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists.
Mm-hmm.
This was a Miami newspaper. My last name was Aparicio. So they offered me a job at the time. And they said, you come down and you bring your 5-year-old boy. We're going to have you cover high school sports in Liberty Heights and Overtown where there had just been riots. Right around the Super Bowl of 89, and I was going to cover those high schools for the sports section, and they offered me $17,000.
There you go.
To move to Miami.
Right, that's right.
Dom, what do you think I did?
I think you have stayed at the Sun Paper.
I had a great shrimp cocktail and really enjoyed myself there in Miami for the 2 days, and I came back and said, Mr. Gibbons, what can I do to help you here and stay here in Baltimore?
Right, but let me add one more thing.
But that
your...
was 30 years ago. That,
right,
you, you know?
But let me add something. You were still on what is called the steps. You said you were making $31,000, so your listeners need to understand that the steps were, I don't know, there were 5 or 6 steps back then. And that every year you would get a raise, bump up to the next step. So you were still guaranteed a pretty good raise until you got to the top of the steps for reporters. So you probably knew that you were going to make even more money because of the union.
Well, I also knew that the value of what I was doing at that point, going to the University of Baltimore and getting a corporate community. I mean, the real concern for me, and Don, I mean, you can speak to this because we speak to university leaders about how do we keep the best doctors who come here and train at Hopkins? How do we keep the best of everything in our community? You have to pay for the best to keep the best. And we talked about Luke Broadwater and this concept that we're talking about here with the Gold Secretary, that making this thing a nonprofit would allow people like in our era, like my father, going back 30 minutes ago, Joan, I guess the reason I brought this up, my dad wanted me to stay here and have a job and be in a union and get a gold watch, and that's where it was. I don't know that we're going back to that era, but to have stability so that government, local issues, all of these things we talk about can be covered at that level, this is where we are in 2020, and I think it's more important than it's ever been, given this election and where we are, that we find ways to take the little Nestors and the little Jones and the reporters, you know, and keep them in the industry because it's so important for democracy, quite frankly.
Yeah. Well, good, good. That was a good way of saying it.
We're going to do everything that we can to save the Sun. Joan, real quick before you jump off. You've had a really exciting career post Sun Paper. I mean, you've written a number of really in-depth research pieces for the Able Foundation. I know you and I talked at one time. You were doing a whole examination of water and water bills and public works. I remember doing a number of interviews with you on that. You've written about mobsters. You've written about crime fighters. What are your takeaways from the work that you've been doing post-Sun? Because it really is expansive.
Well, let me just quickly mention the two memoirs I co-authored. The first one is Wised Up, with a man named Charlie Wilhelm, who basically ran a Baltimore crime ring. And the year he turned 40, he decided to change his life and leave that life behind. And he went undercover for the FBI and put all his friends in prison, including his best friend who'd committed an unsolved murder. And the second book is Eyes of Justice, A Career Crime Fighter Battles Corruption and Blindness, with Jim Cabasis. Now, Jim Cabasis was a Baltimore cop in the early through the 1970s, actually. And we wrote several chapters about police corruption from that time, ineptness, and certainly racism among cops. So those chapters are really very relevant right now. Jim went on to become the chief investigator of Maryland political corruption for almost 40 years. And he did this job while he was going blind. And when he instigated and oversaw the investigation of Mayor Sheila Dixon, Jim was completely blind. And so we obviously tell the whole story of the Sheila Dixon downfall and all of her crimes and indiscretions. And in addition to that, Eyes of Justice is the first history of Maryland political corruption in almost 50 years. So
where can people find these, Jim? Because they
can find them. They can go on Amazon. They can. It's both books are on Amazon, and they are both paperbacks through Amazon as well as Kindle ebooks.
Joan, you mentioned Able Foundation.
Really, if you're from Baltimore and you're interested in you like good stories and you like history and you like intrigue, Joan Jacobson's work, jump on Amazon, look up Wised Up and look up Eyes of Justice. I mean, just terrific work. And then I'm always, and Nestor, this is where you've been fascinated. You've also, Joan, done deep dive into how government works.
Right.
Give us the Joan Jacobson Four Dummies takeaway as to how government works as you've seen it up close and personal, and why it's not more effective than it is.
Well, I think that you need to have more people watching what government does. And certainly, obviously, journalists, investigative reporters, if you go on Baltimore Brew, for example, and you see what they've been doing just for the last week, looking at the Under Armour case and Baltimore Business Journal as well, they're really tapping down into how public money is being used and misused. And that's what's often missing when you don't have enough journalists. Now, that said, if you look at Baltimore City Hall's current Inspector General, Isabel Cummings, is finding all kinds of inappropriate uses of money in city government. You need much more of that. And you just need people watching them. You know, you look at, there's a big project called East Baltimore Development, and it's behind Johns Hopkins, north of Johns Hopkins Medicine. And Melody Simmons and I did a deep dive of how all that public money was used and misused more than 10 years ago. We did this for the Daily Record. And they promised they were going to use all kinds of federal money and all kinds of what's called TIF bonds, tax increment financing. And most of it didn't come true. It just didn't happen for various reasons. Nobody stole money that we knew of, but you just need to watch them. You can't expect government to do the right thing all the time. You have to have somebody watching them.
Well, I caught your piece on Sheila Dixon a couple of weeks ago and at Baltimore Brew and sharing that. I want to ask you about the Able Foundation, because when I think of A.S. Able, you know, I think of the Sun. I don't know if that name means as much on the streets as it would to a kid who grew up reading it and knew about it. What A.S. Able and the Able Foundation, give me a little history lesson on that, Joan.
Well, okay, well, A.S. Able was the original owner of the Baltimore Sun, and the owner until, I can't remember what year, the paper was sold to the Times Mirror Corporation.
It was in the late 80s. I remember
call
from Jack
80s.
Gibbons. Yeah.
The Able Foundation, I mean, the Able company owned the Sun, and in addition to that, the company had a small charitable foundation called the Able Foundation, When the paper was sold to Times Mirror, the foundation got a windfall of several million dollars. And so that funded, to this day, a pretty substantial foundation. Able Foundation is headed by Bob Embry. It has amazing people working for him, super, super smart people. And they give money away to any good cause that will uplift Baltimore City. And they do research studies, too, and I did about eight of them. And some of them had to do with housing programs in the city gone awry, the insane water affordability problem in Baltimore City, where the amount of money the Baltimore City government is charging people for water is too high. People can't afford it. Issues on education. So the Able Foundation has become a big player in Baltimore. And so it is logical that they would be interested, along with Goldsecker now, to actually put up enough money to buy the paper. I mean, there are other Tribune papers out there where the people who are, you know, the reporters in them are trying to find owners or to who would purchase the paper. In Baltimore, we already have somebody who's going to put up the money.
Are you optimistic, when you wake up in the morning and you take on this fight each and every day, where are you on the optimistic meter as the clock is ticking? What do you
know.
Say to folks?
Well, I'd say that we have to push forward and be optimistic. Whether or not there's a chance Tribune will sell, I have no idea what's going on. And that's being, you know, held very closely among the, you know, the people who are trying to buy it. But I think we are all being optimistic. And let me add a couple of names here. The people at The Sun who are helping run the Save Our Sun campaign include a longtime reporter named Liz Bowie, who's an expert on education.
And terrific reporter.
Terrific. And a young reporter named Lily Reed. Her byline's Lillian Reed. She's really also an excellent reporter. And she's kind of representing the younger generation. Super smart young woman. And they're really working on this, you know, with the News Guild and with KO, which is the PR firm that has been hired with the Guild money to do with this campaign. And so I'm optimistic that they're doing everything they possibly can to put the sale together and make it happen.
SaveOurBaltimoreSun.com is the way to get that. Go ahead, Don.
No, I was just going to say, you've got an all-star team. You start talking about these reporters, whether it's Luke Broadwater, Pam Wood, Liz Bowie, Liz and I again. Liz is probably, I don't want to exaggerate, Liz probably interviewed me, you know, 30, 40, 50 times over the past 15 or 20 years. And again, just outstanding reporter. My last thought, and we'll let you go, is I get pretty romantic about The Sun. People kidded me over the years. We always take, we're not this year, for the first time, like many others, we won't be going to Ocean City because of the pandemic. Hopefully we'll be returning next year as a family. But my routine, even though it's on the phone, even though I can read it digitally, my routine every morning is to get up before everybody else gets up, walk across to the 7-Eleven, get a paper, get a coffee, come back on the porch, look at the ocean, and read The Sun from cover to cover. And it would be tragic if future generations don't have that opportunity. Regardless of what the president says, the press is not and never has been the enemy of the people. We have to save The Sun. And with that, Nestor, I'll just thank you.
Drop the mic right there.
Thank you for having me, both of you.
Joan, you have nothing to add after that, right?
No.
We appreciate Joan Jacobson, who I've known since I was 17 years old, 1986, and Don Moeller as well, who got me into my first journalism class in August of 1982. It's actually how we met. So together, we are Baltimore Positive. Appreciation for all of our sponsors. I'm going to hold the ice cream up for Don Moeller here, the Key Lime Pie that's empty. It smells like Key Lime. Pecan Pie too, all the stuff that the Taharka folks do here, made here in Baltimore. We're going to be telling you more about that, and I promise you, they're actually piling up the empty pints of ice cream behind me. Our friends at State Fair, get on over there, chicken and waffles, lunch, the big tent outside. I've had lunch over there twice this week. I should have taken a little bit of a sweater last week, but the weather's getting a little bit better now. Get on over to State Fair, enjoy yourself. They're opening a great Mexican restaurant across the street as well. Our friends at Fadley's opening across the parking lot in Catonsville, and coming to you from Lexington Market, you can ship those crab cakes from anywhere in the world. Make somebody summer right during the middle of this crazy pandemic. Ship them some Fadley's crab cakes. Easy to do. Jeff Moeller's there, still selling homes from 6 feet away with a mask on, showing your home online. You can learn more about all they do at Moeller and Gary Realty. And, of course, Don Moeller here. Each and every episode of Baltimore Positive, now 250 strong. Find us out on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and on the back porch and everywhere we are. WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Calm, local, nothing more local than Save Our Baltimore Sun and Baltimore Positive.